Women's Health Melbourne is an innovative, holistic fertility and women's health practice. We are world leaders in IVF and egg freezing and provide our patients with every opportunity to achieve their goals.
Our hand-picked, expert team provides the ultimate care experience for our patients. Reach us at womenshealthmelbourne.com.au and follow us at Women's Health Melbourne and at Dr. Raylia Liu. Welcome back to Knocked Up. I'm joined, as always, by Dr. Raylia Liu. Welcome, Raylia.
Hi, Geordie. How are you doing?
I'm great, and I'm a bit excited for this episode because it was one of my questions. I wanted to know what an artificial cycle was. I have been hearing that term, and I really had no idea what it was or what it meant or why you would do it.
We're talking about how we prepare the womb for the placement of an embryo created in IVF into the womb to achieve a pregnancy. There are different ways of doing that. An artificial cycle, it's also sometimes called an HRT or hormone replacement therapy cycle, is a way where we completely and utterly override nature. We take over the womb to create a receptive environment to replace an embryo medically. This is the type of cycle that we have the most control. It is also potentially the type of cycle where we have the most burden to the patient in terms of the medications that they need to use every day. When you see pictures of lots and lots of needles around a little baby on Instagram, probably that baby was conceived by a form of artificial cycle, because we know in the US particularly, which dominates a lot of our images from IVF, the preference is injectable progesterone in an artificial cycle. That's an American tradition. It's not necessarily the best or only way, but it's certainly what they do in America most of the time. They use a lot of intramuscular progesterone, and we now happily also have subcuticular injectable progesterone, which is progesterone we can inject more superficially under the skin. It's a lot better tolerated form of injectable progesterone.
Is that the injections you do into your tummy?
Yeah, so most IVF injections are what we call subcuticular. It means that you inject them into a skin fold in your tummy or anywhere really. Some people can do it over the thigh or over the buttock, or you can move it around. But the depot progesterone formulations that are often used in America, and we use them here too as probably more of a last resort, are intramuscular. So they last a long time. They're a big deposit of progesterone, but they hurt and they can cause bruising. And some people, they can even cause an infected abscess. So we don't love them here in Australia. We're very lucky. The way that IVF is funded in Australia means that our Medicare system and pharmaceutical benefit scheme system does support a lot of the medications we use, not all of them. So there's still a big burden to patients, particularly in progesterone medication in some contexts. But we do have a lot of help with medications, and medications are not as expensive here as they are in some places. And so we do have also a bigger range of medications that we have access to, and we get a little bit creative with how we give medications to try and make the burden for patients a little bit less severe. And cost is part of that, because the intramuscular progesterone that's used a lot in other countries is probably the least expensive form, being that it is one of the oldest forms and it's not a form that has a lot of drug company patents. So that's one of the reasons for its historic use, just for cost savings. And it is a very effective drug. But getting back to artificial cycles, how we take over the cycle is we turn off your own ovulation. And it's also a cycle type that can be used for someone who doesn't have an ovulation cycle, whether that be because they've got a reason for not ovulating despite having eggs, or it could be that they're past menopause, and that may be premature ovarian insufficiency going through menopause at an earlier stage than is average or usual. Or it might be that they're trying to have a baby later in life and that they've already gone through menopause at a reasonable age. We say that menopause is premature if it happens under the age of 40. Some people find that stat pretty shocking because people think of themselves in our 40s. I certainly do, as, you know, full of life. But in terms of the reproductive years, it's considered the lower end of the normal range to go through menopause at 40, and anything after that is par for the course. But some people do go through menopause at an earlier age. Sometimes it's because they've had a genetic predisposition to that. Sometimes it's because they've had surgery to remove the ovaries for whatever reason. Sometimes it's because of a cancer diagnosis that may have been nothing to do with the ovaries, but for which they had chemotherapy that destroyed ovarian potential and caused an early menopause. So there's lots of reasons. And endometriosis is another reason. Sometimes people have had surgery for endometriosis and that's caused their ovarian reserve to be diminished. So there are many, many reasons that someone might not be having a regular menstrual cycle. You don't have to be having no menstrual cycles whatsoever to have a dysfunctional menstrual cycle, and choosing an artificial cycle might be something we do for someone who has a dysfunctional menstrual cycle because we can control the hormones through artificial means. So that might mean someone who has a very short cycle and we're worried that they aren't taking really not enough time to prepare the lining of the uterus to be optimal in their natural cycle, or they may be ovulating too early, or they may have a luteal phase defect, meaning they don't make enough progesterone themselves to support a pregnancy. And so if you don't have a reliable natural cycle, creating the environment in the uterus that's more receptive through artificial means can be one of the ways that we help you get pregnant with an embryo transfer. So sometimes for some people, the problem's not the embryo, it's the way their womb is prepared. And so we can take over and drive rather than rely on their natural hormones.
What are the benefits of doing an artificial cycle?
There are lots of benefits of doing an artificial cycle. One of which is also potentially patient convenience. Even though taking the medications, which involves taking roughly 2 to 3 weeks of estrogen oral tablets followed by progesterone medicine to support a pregnancy, it can be timed to your schedule. So even though taking the medications is a bit of a burden, you have to do it every day, it's a discipline. If you're using injectable progesterone, it can be painful. You can also use vaginal progesterone, which some people find more difficult than progesterone by injection just because it can cause discharge and irritation. So you kind of choose your most favoured method. And sometimes we use a little bit of both. I quite often use a little bit of both. I use a bit of vaginal progesterone often to diminish the amount of injections that somebody needs. But there have been quite a few studies, mainly out of America, that show that while vaginal progesterone is good, higher pregnancy rates are achieved with a combination of vaginal plus injections compared to vaginal alone. So I used to, years ago before that data came out, use mainly vaginal progesterone in artificial cycles and only top up with injectable progesterone for patients who had low levels on a blood test. These days I tend to use a combination to avoid that problem and to achieve maximal pregnancy rates, as science suggests that that's the best approach. Convenience, making sure the levels are perfect, making sure that cycles are the same cycle to cycle, that there's good maintenance of the right hormone levels that we know help embryos do their best. All of those things are benefits of an artificial cycle. With the estrogen tablets at the beginning, we can continue them for a bit longer if someone's lining is not as thick as we would like it to be, so we can control that. We know that to some degree, the thickness of the endometrium can predict embryo implantation, particularly for patients who are known to have a thin endometrium. And one of the problems of having a short cycle may be that you do have a thin endometrium because ovulation can happen earlier in the cycle before the lining has had a chance to get to its best condition. And yeah, just the flexibility of an artificial cycle, being able to time an artificial cycle to coordinate things like egg or embryo donation, to coordinate things like warming a frozen egg. If you've frozen your eggs when you were younger and we come to use them, I'll often warm them in an artificial cycle because it gives me more control and it allows me to time your egg warming and egg insemination and also embryo transfer with a lot of precision. When we're warming eggs that were frozen, I often use an artificial cycle. So there's lots of upsides of an artificial cycle. It's also the preferred cycle for syncing cycles between egg or embryo donors and their recipients. So we can have somebody having an egg collection. Let's just say, pretend your own eggs, unfortunately, devastatingly, haven't resulted in a pregnancy and you choose to use egg donation. Maybe your friend or your sister gives you some eggs and they do a fresh egg collection for you. We can use an artificial cycle to time your cycle in sync with their cycle, remembering that in IVF, it is not set in stone what day your egg collection is going to be from the beginning of your cycle. We don't know that. We know that the egg collection is something dynamic, and we time it based on how follicles in your ovary perform on an ultrasound scan that we generally do somewhere between cycle day 8 and 12. We often do ultrasound monitoring to decide when the best day for an egg retrieval will be. So we can use an artificial cycle in the person who's going to receive the egg. We call that the recipient, to be able to do what we call a fresh embryo transfer into the recipient's prepared lining. So that's one of the ways that the flexibility of an artificial cycle can be really, really helpful. We do know that some people do travel internationally for egg donation. We know that there are some real barriers to egg donation in Australia with our current legislation. And so, again, it's a very reliable form of cycle if that was something that someone was doing. So international travel with a natural cycle is a lot more precarious. We like to have the certainty if you're booking a plane and booking accommodation and having all of the costs involved in that type of treatment. We want a cycle type that's going to be really reliable and that's going to be really flexible. So those are real advantages of an artificial cycle.
So it sounds pretty good, an artificial cycle. It sounds very organized and structured, and I can plan around it. Are there any downsides?
Yeah, definitely. So there are definite downsides to an artificial cycle as well. It's one of those things that when we choose the type of preparation for an embryo transfer, we take into account all of the pros, all of the cons, and of course also a patient's preference. With a medicated cycle or artificial cycle, as I pointed to a little bit before, the medication is quite onerous. It is a discipline. You have to take it, and you have to take it for the first trimester of pregnancy. What we're actually doing is we are supporting the pregnancy completely artificially. You do not ovulate in this type of cycle. You don't have what we call a corpus luteum, which is the progesterone and vasoactive peptide making factory that the ovary normally turns the follicle that releases an egg into after the ovulation has happened. So corpus luteum, it's complicated. It doesn't just make progesterone, it makes all kinds of different peptide protein factors. And we believe that while replacing progesterone is the critical ingredient to creating a receptive environment for pregnancy and supporting a pregnancy, the other factors play a role as well. And we do notice that in artificial cycles, if you look statistically at them, and studies have supported this, there is a relative risk of preeclampsia, which is a condition of blood pressure in pregnancy related to placental function, that is higher with an artificial cycle than with a natural cycle for embryo transfer or an ovulation induction cycle. And the difference between those two cycles is the presence or absence of a corpus luteum. So some of the things that nature uses, they're not necessarily critical ingredients for success of a pregnancy, but they can help form a healthier placenta. Now, I guess it's important to point out that most patients who have an artificial cycle will have a perfectly healthy placenta and they won't have preeclampsia. But these relative risks are important to acknowledge, and it might be one of the reasons that you choose to do a different preparation in someone who you feel may be at a higher risk of preeclampsia through their other medical history or other factors. We also know that the placenta fully becomes what we call autonomous at making progesterone, the main progesterone making factory for the pregnancy, gradually between 7 weeks of pregnancy and about 10 weeks of pregnancy, with peak function at about 12 weeks of pregnancy. So between then the first part of the pregnancy, the corpus luteum in a natural cycle is 100% responsible for making progesterone to support the pregnancy. And there have been some studies that would be considered completely unethical now that were done in the past where a pregnant person had their corpus luteum surgically removed and the pregnancy's miscarried. Now, of course, that's abhorrent to think about, but look, science evolves by discovery and we didn't know. So that's how we figured it out. That was many, 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 many years ago before the current generation would be trying to have babies, but we do learn from the past to move on for the future. So the corpus luteum in a natural cycle is 100% necessary for the health of a pregnancy. The world's most healthy embryo without progesterone support will not be able to establish a pregnancy and a healthy placenta. The other thing to say is that we tend to keep the medication going for a little bit longer than is strictly necessary, just because we definitely don't want a miscarriage to happen because of withdrawal of medication. So I tend to keep my patients going between 10 and 12 weeks of pregnancy so that we know for sure that when we stop the medication, their placenta will be completely running off its own steam to support the pregnancy. So I would say those two factors would be my main reluctance to use artificial cycles and why I wouldn't use them for all patients. That would be the burden of treatment with medication. That also increases the cost to patients because they need to pay for the medications. And in embryo transfer cycles, we know progesterone is not subsidized by the Australian government currently, and so that can represent a much higher out-of-pocket cost for patients paying for the medications for the first trimester. But on balance, it can be a great way to do a cycle. It's a really good way to do a cycle preparation in someone who doesn't have a reliable and regular period. It is a great way to sync cycles between donors and recipients. It's a great way to coordinate long distance medicine, whether that be overseas or even for local patients coming from the country. We've got to remember in Australia that not everybody has access to IVF treatment in their suburb or in their town or even in their city. So I do have a significant number of patients from rural places in even Victoria who come to Melbourne for IVF. And when it comes to preparing for embryo transfer, that can be a way that they could potentially do their early monitoring close to home and only come to the city for embryo transfer. So for their quality of life and convenience, that can be a really good way of doing things. And it's a really well-studied, well-supported method that is very effective at achieving a pregnancy with frozen embryo transfer and IVF.
As a patient, how do you know what to do in an artificial cycle? It sounds like there's a lot to coordinate.
Treatment in an artificial cycle is literally like following a recipe. Your doctor will write a recipe for you of how to prepare your uterus with medications. The first part of the treatment will be purely taking estrogen tablets 3 times a day. You'll schedule that, and quite often your treating doctor and nurses, which is what we do in our clinic, will write out a literal diary of what you need to do every day. In the first part of cycle preparation, where we're just growing a lining, you will most days just be taking an oral tablet 2 or 3 times a day, depending on your regimen. It will be in your diary to do that morning, noon and night, and that's what you have to do on those days. You'll be asked to come in for an ultrasound around 10 or 12 days into that regimen. And what we're looking for is how thick your lining is and if we're happy, because the first part of your schedule is purely to thicken your lining. We sometimes ask you to continue a little bit longer before starting the next phase if your lining is not as thick as we would like it to be. And prolonged estrogen exposure will result in a thicker endometrium for most patients. When we're happy on your ultrasound that your lining is adequately thick, we will schedule your progesterone rise. This will involve a mixture potentially of vaginal and injectable progesterone medication, and will occur for 5 full days before your embryo transfer. It's really important to understand that in an artificial cycle, we are really bringing your endometrial performance, your uterine performance, back to the mean. So no matter what happens in your natural cycle, We're going to be giving you progesterone therapy to open the receptivity window in an artificial cycle, which is a lot more standardized. And in an artificial cycle, we can plan an embryo transfer anywhere between the fifth day of progesterone medication to the seventh day of progesterone medication. So we have a significant window within which we can put an embryo back into your uterus. And usually we put that embryo back after 5 full days of progesterone medication on the 6th day. So this can be scheduled. Now, when we decide to schedule the start of your progesterone medicine, as long as the lining's thick enough, we have some flexibility. So once we're happy with your lining, we can start progesterone that day, or we can decide that maybe that would result in an embryo transfer time that doesn't suit your schedule. So we might do it 1 or 2 days later so that we can orchestrate when your embryo transfer falls to suit your convenience. That's kind of the schedule. And then what we do is, we don't want you to make a mistake. So we write out that recipe for you, and you know what to do every day with your progesterone. In an artificial cycle, we tend to continue your estrogen. We can reduce the amount that you're taking, but we tend to continue it while we're continuing the progesterone. It is more the progesterone that is important in holding on to a pregnancy once that pregnancy is established. And we keep an eye on the levels with some blood tests, and that allows us to make sure that the regimen that we've prescribed for you is the best regimen to give you the best outcome. And sometimes after embryo transfer, we'll tweak it a little bit, potentially increasing or reducing your progesterone dose to get it perfect. You cannot overdose on progesterone. There cannot be too much progesterone. There can only be too little. And so we really want there to be enough, and we want there to be a steady state. And we also know that if we find that on the day before or the day of an embryo transfer that your levels are not perfect, we have time to perfect them. So it's not a worry. As long as we perfect them when we do that assessment, pregnancy rates are not adversely affected by having a lower progesterone level before your transfer. So as long as we correct them to be optimal, that is really reassuring data that we have from studies that have looked at that in great depth. The rogue element in any embryo transfer cycle is the embryo itself, and many embryo transfers, when they fail, are because of the embryo and the fact that it didn't do the right thing. You should not, in an artificial cycle, get your period before your embryo transfer. In theory, you should not drop your progesterone at all on an artificial cycle. Now, you can still have some bleeding in an artificial cycle in early pregnancy, like in any pregnancy, because we can have some bleeding with implantation. As an embryo tries to find a blood supply and make a placenta, sometimes there's bleeding in early pregnancy. It is critical in an artificial cycle that you do not cease your medications prematurely. You should never stop your medications before we've had a chance to do your pregnancy test. Do not assume that bleeding in early pregnancy is your period. You should not get a period in an artificial cycle. I've had experience of patients doing this in the past where they've thought their period had come and they have been pregnant, and then we have a very stressful situation trying to give back the progesterone that is the lifeline for the pregnancy. So my take-home message is, don't try and manage your own cycle. There are lots of things that have multiple explanations in IVF, particularly with an artificial cycle. Stopping the medications can compromise the pregnancy. So before you make any moves yourself, make sure that you seek medical advice from your doctor and nursing team.
To support Knocked Up, leave us a review or recommend to a friend. Join us on Instagram at Knocked Up Podcast, and join Raylia at Dr. Raylia Lu. And email us your questions to podcast@womenshealthmelbourne.com.au.